addition to the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu to walk around Kol Misalach Baretz La'orko L'Rach Boki Bechor Tenenu, tells him to walk around the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and thereby he acquires ownership of the land. The Gemara says in Bava Basra and Daf Kuf that this was a Kinyan Chazakah. The Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanaim whether this Kinyan Chazakah was a Hayrasha only at that time, or it even applies to the Doris and later generations. If I want to sell a field to my next door neighbor, maybe also you can make such a Kinyan Chazakah just by walking around. We paskin against that opinion. We paskin it was only a Chazakah as a Hayrasha at that time. But at that time, that was the Kinyan. That's at the end of Shlishi. That was the Kinyan. Kum misalach baretz la'or kol ha'rach b'kiluchay teneno. And Avraham Avinu was koina Eretz Yisrael. The Pesukim continued to say later that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris, a covenant with Avraham Avinu, with Yitzchak ben Yaakov, that Eretz Yisrael will belong to the Jewish people. So the Chazon Ish points out, why was there a need for a covenant? He already gave him Eretz Yisrael. A bris is if I promise something in the distant future and I didn't deliver yet, so then I make a bris with you, I promise, I swear, a bris is a shvuah, I swear that I'm going to deliver on my promise. But over here he already gave him Eretz Yisrael, so what was there a need for a bris? So the Chazon Ish explains that we have an international law that the Gemara calls in Gittin, the middle of Gittin, in the Lamed, the principle of Kibush Mulchama, that if one country has a war with another country, so the country that wins the war acquires the property of the country who lost the war. They acquire ownership of the karka and the metalplim, the automobiles and the televisions and the clothing and the people. They have a right to keep the people as slaves. It's not so smart to keep them slaves, they may revolt. But Al-Pidin, Halacha says, Kibush Mulchama is kind of the Gemara says, whether the Jews conquer from the non-Jews, and the non-Jews conquer something from the Jews, or the non-Jews conquer from the non-Jews. The Gemara says that...
For a compromise, land of peace, is that actually a Kenyan Gomor, that it's not under the
Mashallah? Let me first finish the sentence, then you got a good question. So the Chazon Ish points out from this Gemara, the Gemara says the three kinds of Kibush Mulchama. If the Jews wage war against the Noachim, so they're kind of with Kibush Mulchama. The Noachim wage war, the Noachim win the war. It doesn't matter who started the war, it matters who wins the war. So whoever wins the war, if the Noachim win the war against the Jews, so they're kind of. If the Noachim beat out another Noachim nation, the Gemara says, Amon Amoyav Tiharu B'Sichon. The Jews weren't permitted to take over Amon Amoyav, but Sichon waged war against Amon Amoyav, and he won the war, so he took away the territory from Sichem, from Amon Amoyev. So then Bnei Yisrael were not really taking directly from Amon Amoyev, we were taking away from Sichem. So the Gemara says that that pasuk in Chumash in Parshas Devarim teaches us this principle of Kibush Mulchama, that one Nochri nation is kind of property from the other Nochri nation, Amon Amoyev Tiharu B'Sichem, when they win the war. So this principle of Kibush Mulchama applies all over the globe, with the one exception of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael always belongs to the Jewish people. So that's what you're asking a question. It belongs to the Jewish people, can't be taken away with Kibush Mulchama. What about if the Jewish people decide to give it away as a matana? The Pashto says that they're not a bialim to give it away. The Pashto says that they don't have the right to give it away.
Well, ha'aretz, God says?
Yeah. The Pashto says like that.
So the Mekach isn't good?
Probably not valid. Even if you'll do it, it's probably not valid. I'll be pashtus.
But if it's not a matana, but it's land for peace, it's something for something. And
probably also not.
I mean, those are both.
I'll make a deal with you. I'm buying something from you. In exchange, I give you my next door neighbor's apartment. I'm not a balbos to give my. I gave you something in exchange for something, but I had no right to give that something. So the whole deal is off. The whole thing is not valid. Al pi pashtus. So that's what the Chazon Ish explains, that the bris that was made with Avraham, with Yitzchak and Yaakov, the Eretz Yisrael will always belong to the descendants of the three of us, meant that not only does it belong to us, Yerusha, that Avraham Avinu acquired ownership when he walked around the borders, but even if it'll be conquered away from the Jewish people at some time in the future, the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, time of Churban Bayis Sheni, when Eretz Yisrael is taken away from the Jewish people, the Jews still own the whole land. It's not that we acquired ownership of the land in 1948 from the British. We didn't need the British. It belonged to the Jews, the Turks, and through the British, and through the Crusaders, and through all the different nations that were running the land in Eretz Yisrael. It belonged to the Jewish people all along. That's how the Chazon Ish explains the Poshep Shah. There was once a guest here in the yeshiva who was saying Dvar Torah and Rabbi Soloveitchik Shir. So he was assuming the Rambam says that the Gemara points out that Kedusha Saritz didn't begin from the days of Avraham Avinu. The ownership of the land began. Avraham Avinu acquired ownership of the land. But Kedusha Saritz only began in the days of Yeshua Bin Nun. And then the Kedusha Vishayna was undone at the time of Korban Bayis Rishon, and then Ezra and Nechemi made the Kedusha Shniyah. So the Rambam draws a contrast in the Hilchos Beis HaBchira. He says that the Mekadosh of Eretz Yisrael the first time around was Kibush Melchama, when the Jewish armies conquered the land, and then they needed Kibush Mechiluk, when they divided the land among the Shvatim and among the Mishpachas and among the Yechidim. So the Chalukah Saaretz was the Gemara of the Kibush. And the Kedusha Shniyah, at the time of the Kedusha Shniyah, there was no Kibush. All of the Jewish people were still under the control of the Persian government at that time, till later, till the days of the Hashmonaim. Then they established a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. But the first few centuries, there was no Jewish government. They weren't the Balapatim over Eretz Yisrael. So it couldn't be that the Mekadosh of Eretz Yisrael the second time around was the Kibush. There was no Kibush till the days of the Hashmonaim. So it couldn't be that in the first few hundred years, the word mitzvah is borrowed. So it must be that it was some other Mekadosh. The Rambam says the Mekadosh was Chazakeh. So the question is, what does that word mean, Chazakeh? So some understood the word Chazakeh to mean this guest from Eretz Yisrael was assuming like Rabbi Sazam and Meltzer. And Evan also, that the word Chazakeh means like Yikoyne Karka B'Chazakeh. Mishnah says in Kiddushin, if I want to give you, if I want to sell a field to you, it's like I can either sell B'Kesef, B'Shtar, or B'Chazakeh. So Kinya Chazakeh is a Kinyan to acquire ownership of the land. So that's what Rabbi Zalman and this, what this guest, the rabbi from Eretz Yisrael, was assuming, that the Mekadosh of Eretz Yisrael the second time around was the Kinyan Chazakeh. So Rabbi Soloveitchik got very upset, and he argued with this guest, the Magid Shir. He said that it's absolutely not true. Eretz Yisrael belonged to the Jewish people during the 70 years of Galus Bavel also. We didn't lose our ownership. The Kedusha Saaretz vanished into thin air at the time of but the ownership of Eretz Yisrael was retained. So what do you mean we made a Kinya Chazakeh at the beginning of the Tkufas Bayis Sheni? We didn't need a Kinya Chazakeh, it belonged to us all along. So you have to interpret Chazakeh differently. Whatever the Rambam, you have to figure out where the Rambam got it from and what is he talking about? What does the word Chazakeh mean? Yeah, the Mishnah says, Noal Gadar Paras Kolshu, that's when you want to sell a field, give a matana of a field to another person. So that's Chazakeh, right? But over here, Rav Soloveitchik thought, it can't mean, the Rambam can't be referring to that kind of a Chazakeh because it belonged to the Jews all along. What do they have to make another Kinyan for? It was theirs. They had to do some kind of a Mekadosh. They thought Chazakeh meant it, Yashvut, the fact that they just moved into the land, or something like that.
Isn't Chazakeh also used as just a proof, not ownership? For instance, Chazakeh 3 years, and it doesn't determine ownership.
That's another Chazakeh, right? The Prima Gadim writes in the Psicha Kolelis, the Orech Chaim, that the word Chazakeh appears in the Gemara with many different meanings. So one is Cheskes Habatim Shalashonim, that it's a proof that my taina is true. I say that I bought the field from the first guy. If I say I've been living here for 10 years and no one ever complained, no one kicked me out, squatter's rights, so we don't have any squatter's rights. Chazakeh Sheni Mataina is not a good Chazakeh. But if I claim the karka belongs to me, I bought it from you, but I held on to the shtar for a few years, but how long do you have to hold on? So I threw out the shtar already. I can't hold on to all of my documents forever. I have a house full of documents. Every 5 years, I throw out all the junk in the house. So if I was living in the house for 3 years, then it's a cheskes habatim shalashonim, that's a proof that it's mine. And kinya chazakeh is a different chazakeh. You acquire ownership. And then you have a chazakeh, we call a ruba deleisa kamon chazakeh. Chazakeh ein odem pareh toch zmano. We have an assumption that people don't pay till their debts till the last minute. If you owe money, why should you pay half a year in advance? I can get the interest in the bank, so I wait till the last minute, then I'm going to pay. And then you have another chazakeh in a meikara. If something was becheskas iser, beima becheskas iser, a man is actually varolach b'manishchato, beima becheskas heter. That's a status quo, it's a different kind of chazakeh. Then betrays him, they have a chazakeh. It's a totally different kind of chazakeh. How many times does some strange occurrence have to repeat itself that if she create a latest asafik, then maybe there's a shtickled pattern over here. Maybe it indicates that there's something going on. That's a different type of a chazakeh. Each one is a totally different chazakeh. They're unrelated to each other. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said, that he didn't think that you can interpret the Rambam The Rambam says that the Kedusha Shniyah that was accomplished in the days of Ezra and Nechemiah was like, Chazake. He said it does mean Chazake, that's kind of Karka. They already owned the Karka of Eretz Yisrael. In the days of Avraham Avinu, they never lost the ownership. That's what the Chazanish says the same in the Sefer on Shviyas. He says that was what the Bris accomplished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Eretz to Avraham Avinu, he made a kinyan. That the Gemara says in Bava Basra, that was the kinyan Chazake. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris, a covenant, and the Ramban HaChumash writes in a few places that a bris means the same as a shvuah, and that means al kol panim, under all circumstances, is not going to be altered, it's not going to be changed. It means Eretz Yisrael will remain under Jewish ownership, even if it'll be taken away by Ayidei Kibush Melchama, it'll still belong to the Jewish people. So this was these are the important themes in today's Sedra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham Avinu ve'eschol legoy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. Eschol legoy is already a chiddush. The halacha does not recognize the other nations of the world as a goy, as a nation. We use as a Yiddishism, and in Tanakh also it's a slang, we call the other nations goy hu arotzes, but strictly speaking they're really mishpachos v'adama. They're families. Ammon and Moav and so on, and Edom and Mitzrayim and Knani, Chiti, Amor, Aprizai, Yusuf, Girgoshu, all of these are not really goyim. They're mishpachos. And the only goy in the whole wide world is the Jewish people. Me, Kamchus, O Goyechot, we're the only ones who are a goy. There's a difference in halacha. That by mishpacha, the Gemara says, mishpacha sab kriyim mishpacha, mishpacha saimena kriyim mishpacha. If you have a mixed marriage, the status of the children is determined by the father with respect to which mishpacha he belongs to, whether the child will be mishpachas kuhune, mishpachas leviya, whether the child will be from Shevet Zvulun, from Shevet Yehuda, from Shevet Binyamin. So that's based on the pasuk in the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar, le mishpachaisam laveis avaisam, mishpachas sav kriyim mishpacha, mishpachas aimena kriyim mishpacha. The same thing, Yerusha. It says you give the Yerusha to the to the son, to the brother, to the uncle, etc. And if or the whole immediate family is not alive, then you give it akoravelav mi mishpachtoi the yorashoisa only mishpacha. The Gemara says mishpacha same doesn't get Yerusha, only mishpacha sav. Mishpacha same is a different chaloshim kurva that's called share bosom, but the kurva of mishpacha is only through the father's side. So that's what the Gemara says. If you have a mixed marriage, a Kanani marries a Yavusi, that's going to be the same din, doesn't make a difference. A Kanani marries a Mitzri, and they have children. So what is the status of the children? Are they Mitzrim or are they Kanani? So the Gemara says, it's determined by the father. And the Rishonim say the reason why is because it's a din omnishpachosim leveis avosim. And the same is true if both parents are Jewish and you want to determine whether the child is a Kohen or a Levi or Shevet Zvulon or Shevet Yisachar or whatever, it depends on the father. That's l'mishpachosim l'veis avosim. The only case in a mixed marriage where it depends on the mother is to determine whether the child is Jewish or not Jewish. So there, Taisus in Yevamos points out, at the end of the first paragraph in Yevamos, Taisus points out that there are three opinions in the Tanoim and Amorim. One opinion is like the Reform, that either the father or the mother is Jewish or the child is Jewish. The other opinion is that you need both the father and the mother in order that the child should be Jewish. And the third opinion, that's the accepted opinion, is that it all depends on the mother. So it's the chapela. How come there isn't a fourth opinion? And that should have been the accepted opinion, the one that nobody holds. It all depends on the father. Why doesn't anybody say that? So all the din will be exactly the same. If both parents are Jewish, it depends on the father. Both parents are goyim, it depends on the father. If you have a mixed marriage, but one is Jewish and one is not Jewish, it depends on the mother. So the answer is that the Tanoim understood that being Jewish is not a function of which mishpacha you belong to. Lo haraya, that you can have an institution of gerus. The gerus is not related to anybody, and he's still Jewish. You can be Jewish without belonging to the mishpacha of the Jews. One ger all along, not related to a soul in the world. Once he converts, not related to his non-Jewish relatives. He didn't have any children yet after he converted. He doesn't have any Jewish relatives. Not related to a soul in the world, and is still Jewish. So you see that being Jewish, having the status of being Jewish, is not a function of mishpacha. So that's why the Tanoim assumed that that pasuk from mishpachosim leveis avosim cannot apply in this case. That they were fishing around for other psukim. What determines whether a person belongs to the goy of Am Yisrael, the goy Yisrael, the Jewish people, nationhood? So they had a machlekes haTanoim, but they didn't. All the three opinions, no one held that it depends on the father. because it's not really a function of mishpacha. So this is a machlokes hatan. This is a machlokes harishon. Be'ezcha legoy gadol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu that it make him into a goy, unlike the other nations of the world, that a mishpacha is going to make the Jewish people into a goy. So to establish the status of the children, it'll be determined not by the father, it'll be determined either by both parents, or by either parent, or by the mother, or whatever shita we accept, the shita that all depends on the mother. But it won't be determined by the father. So that's a famous machlokes that the Ramban quotes in Chumash Vayikra, the end of where Parshas Emor. He has a machlokes with the Chachmei HaTzarfatim, with the Baalei HaTosfos. From what point on did this din set in? That to determine whether the child is Jewish depends on the mother as opposed to the father. So the Baalei HaTosfos think that it only began after Matan Torah. But the Eschol HaGoy Gadol is a promise that was delivered in the future. After Maimon HaSina, then we became a goy. Before then, we were a mishpacha. We became a goy later. The Rambam thinks that it's not true. They're right away from the days of Avraham Avinu. It was already the Eschol HaGoy Gadol. So that's their machlokes. What happened in between the days of Avraham Avinu and Matan Torah if you would have a mixed marriage? Shloimeh Bas Divri had the child, the one who was the Megarev, she had the child from the Mitzri. That's what it says in the Chumash. The father was a non-Jew, and the mother was Jewish. So the question was whether the child was Jewish or not. So Rashi and Chumash quotes, Malamin Shin is Gayer, that he converted. So that's the Machlokes HaRishonim. So some Rishonim say he had to convert because he was really not Jewish, because Kodeh Matan Torah, the status of the children was determined by the father. So he was not Jewish, he had to convert. And that's how the Baalei HaTosfos assumed Pshat in the Rashi. And the Ramban quotes the Chachmei HaTzarfatim, the Baalei HaTosfos, the end of Parshas Emor, and he disagrees, and he says, no, Malam Shin is Gayer, at Maimon HaSina, everybody was Nizgayer. He was Nizgayer, the same as everybody else. He was Jewish from the day he was born, and the whole Klal Yisrael entered into an act of Geiris at the occasion of Maimon HaSina. But it does mean that Kodeh Matan Torah, the status of the child of in a mixed marriage would be determined by their father. Ramban disagrees. So that's the Shaila. When did this Haftocha set in? Eschol HaGoy Gadol, that the Jewish people were singled out, that we will become a Goy as opposed to the other peoples, the other nations who are really considered Mishpacha Yisro Adam. How do you translate Nivruchu B'cho Kol Mishpacha Yisro Adam? How do you translate the Nivruchu? So the Pashup Shat is Miloshen Barucha. Miloshen Barucha. That a Nochri will give a blessing to his child. And let's say you should grow up to be like Avraham Avinu. You should grow up to be like that Jewish person down the block. Rashi writes, Pshuto is, there are many midrashim, and Rashi said, Pshuto is, Adam Ayim Lebeno, Tehei Kavram. You should grow up to be like this Jewish person. Someone was saying the other day that when the rabbis went to Washington in the middle of the Second World War to impress upon President Roosevelt that he should try to save the Jews. So he didn't want to meet with them. President Roosevelt didn't want to meet with them. But other people met with them. So Mrs. Roosevelt met with them. So she stretched out her hand to shake hands with one of the rabbis. So he said, in our religion, we don't shake hands with women who are, that we're not married to. So apparently, they say that it was known that her husband was very friendly with other women, in addition to his own wife. So she said she wishes her husband would follow that religion. She wishes her husband would follow that religion, that he shouldn't take hands with other women other than his wife. So that's what Rashi claims is the Pshut Shal Mikra, that the Nochrim will give brachas to their children. Halabai should grow up to be a tzaddik and a righteous person and an ish yosher like Pliny the Jew. Rashbam has a different interpretation on Pipshuto. He says that the verb v'nivruchu is not miloshen brocha, but miloshen havrocha. Havrocha. To graft on, like one grafts on a branch from one tree onto a different tree, and then you have the fruit that's going to grow is going to be a hybrid, a blend of the two trees. So v'nivruchu b'cho is a reference to Geirus, the institution of Geirus. The non-Jews will be able to join into the Jewish nation if they choose to. This was told to Avraham Avinu from the very beginning. And then the Pesukim say later that when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he took with him Anefesh Asher Asa Bechoran. So the Medrash has the tradition that refers to all of the Gerim. Avram was Megairis, so Anoshim, Misora Megayeres, as Anoshim, that they, the Rabbi Shalom told them in Ivrichu, that they're going to be, the Jewish religion, the Jewish people accepts Gerim. So they accepted a lot of Gerim, as per instructions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they accepted a lot of Gerim. That's a shaila. When did Avraham Avinu become a ger? At which point exactly? So the Marsha says that the Marsha comments on the Mishnah in the end of Kiddushin. It says, "Kiyem Avraham Avinu kol ha-tarkula, ad shelo nitna Avraham Avinu volunteered to keep all of the mitzvahs even before he was commanded to. The mitzvahs weren't given until Maimon HaSinai, and he figured out on his own. The Medrash says he had kloyos yoatzos, he had intuition, had the ability to look into the world and to understand what the mitzvahs were. He could even understand the mitzvahs der Rabbanon."
It says, "Nasu go beis klayos to shnei rabbanim." Yeah,
that's the lashon. Yeah.
Does this mean nevuah, or does this mean that he saw out the teva and then memele he was nifonin and then said that there's a boreola?
Usually, assume that he didn't do it by nevuah. That he figured out. The medrash says Hakadosh Baruch Hu is tackled by raisa boras olam. Baruch Shalom looked into the Torah and he constructed the world accordingly. So Avraham Avinu looked into the world and he could figure out what the blueprint was. He can figure out what the Torah was.
Like
you have to have a lot of chokhmah.
Okay.
But the Medrash says that he could even figure out the dinim de Rabbana. That's a chiddush. And Nesivus has a famous chiddush in Hilchas Mekach HaMemkar, Hilchas Mechira in Shulchan Aruch, commenting on a Rambam that's quoted there, that there's a difference between a din d'oraisa and a din d'rabbanan. A din d'oraisa, macholos asuris, he's talking about. So he says, anisa d'oraisa is anisa chevtza. And he says, rabbanan is just anisa gavra. It's not intrinsic, it's not inherent in the thing. The chachamim prohibits something. But here, the medrash says that Avraham Avinu could look into the Torah, he can even figure out the din of d'rabbanan. It means that the din of d'rabbanan, before they were instituted even, are also in the teva. Also in the teva. Really, the din of the Rabbanon, that's the famous Ritva, the first parak in first parak in Rosh Hashanah, has a comment on the Gemara. Bipnei ma amra Torah. Why did the Torah say you should say imru lefanei malchus zechanus of shofes? So they ask a kasha. Malchus zechanus of shofes only be the Rabbanon. It's not min haTorah. Most of the Rishonim hold that it's like the Ramban. It's only be the Rabbanon. Rashi seems to hold the malchus zechanus of shofes is the Raisa. We spoke about it before Yom Tov. But the Ramban, most of the Rishonim assume that the Malchus HaShem is only with the Rabbanon. So what does the Gemara use such a lashon that the Torah tells us to say Malchus HaShem? So the Ritva writes, he has a tradition from his Rabbeim that whenever you have a din Rabbanon that has an asmachta from a pasuk, it's not that asmachta is just the zich and dvarim bi'alma, just to remember the din that you shouldn't forget. So they tacked it on to a pasuk. He can make an asmachta on a telephone book also. He can make an asmachta on a newspaper. Make an asmachta on anything, if that's all it is, just to remember. So the Ritva says, now we have a tradition that it's much more than that. Asmachta means that was the author's intention. When the Ribbono Shel Olam dictated the Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what he meant. He meant it to be a din d'oraisa, and sometimes he meant to encourage the Chachamim that they should institute a din d'rabbanan. But the din of the Rabbanan are also there. It's really part of the system. And it's like a din in a chefze, that the Chachamim just uncovered the thing that the Rebbe Shlom is hinting to from day number one. So that's what this medrash seems to be assuming also. Afilu Erev Tchumen, the Gemara says. Afilu Erev Tavshilin, or the other gives Erev Tchumen. Whatever it is, it's only a din der Rabbanan, it's not a din der Raisa. So the Maharsha in the Chiddushi Agada has a comment with them. The Mishnah has such a tradition. He figured out on his own, he could figure out what the mitzvahs of the Torah were, even though the Baal Shalom didn't command him at all. And he volunteered as an Eina Mitzvah to fulfill these mitzvahs. From what time on did he volunteer to do these mitzvahs? So the Maharsha has a comment after he did the Bris Milah. Before he performed the Bris Milah, it would not make any sense. He thinks that after he performed the Bris Milah, that's when he became Jewish. That was the Milah of Gerus. There are two types of Milah at the end of the Parsha. You have a Milah for an Eved Kenani who's a Yelid Bais and a Miknas Kesef. Yelid Bais means that his mother was a Shivcha Kenainis, who was already Tovla L'Shem Shivcha Knainis, and the mother was Chayva Mitzvahs, like an Isha. And then the Shivcha Knainis gives birth to a baby, so the baby, when it's born, is automatically Kodesh B'Kdusha Sebe Knaini, is Chayva Mitzvahs Ki Isha. So when you perform the Bris Milah on that baby, that's a Milah Shal Mitzvah. So that requires Yom HaShmini. Let's say you have a baby is born to Jewish parents. The mother and the father are both Jewish, and then you perform the Bris Milah on the Yom HaShmini. So that's not, in Yiddish, there's an expression, they say, Megeit Yiddish and das Kind. We're going to make the baby into a Jew. But that's not accurate. Before the Bris Milah, the baby is also a Jew. But every Jewish baby is a convert. So how are they Kohanim or Levim? They're not converts. It's a Milu Shel Mitzvah. It's not a Milu Shel Geris. If you take a non-Jew and he wants to convert, that's a Milu Shel Geris. So the Milu is one of the Maisim of Geris. So the Chumash has two types of Milu Sevet K'naini. One is Yilid Bais, one is Miknas Kesem. So Yilid Bais means the mother was a Shivcha K'naini. His mother was already had a Kedushas Yisrael Lachatzoyin. She was Chai Benitzes Kisha. When she gives birth to a baby, that's called Yilid Bais. The baby's ready, Kodesh B'Kdusha Sebe K'naini. It's Chai Benitzes Kisha. So that's a Milah Shal Mitzvah. So that Milah is B'Shmini, and that's Decha Shabbos, the Rambam says. Not only Milah Satina Ki Yisrael is Decha Shabbos, Milah Sebe K'naini, if he's a Yilid Bais, is Decha Shabbos. Then the Chumash has, there's another din of Milah, which is not B'Shmini, that's Miknas Kesef. If I buy an Ebekneini from someone else, either he sells himself as an Ebekneini, or someone else owns him as an Ebekneini, and the other person sells him to me. So when I purchase an Ebekneini, so I also have to be Malhim, the Shem Kedushas Ebekneini. So that the Gemara learns out from the Pesukim Chumash that a Miknas Kesef is Dima Lechot, you can perform the Bris Milah on day number one. If he was born this morning, you can perform the Bris Milah on the same day. Milah Bishmini is only when it's a Milah Shal Mitzvah, but when it's a Milah Shal Geris, then there is no Din of Shmini. That's the Pashtus in the Pesukim. That's the Pashtus in the Mishnah like that. That's the difference between Yilid Bais and Miknas Kesef. Some Rishonim and some Achronim disagree. They hold, let's say, one is adopting a non-Jewish baby, and we pick up the baby from the hospital. It was born yesterday, and we pick up the baby today. So the Pashtus says you can perform the Bris Milah today. It's a Milah Shal Geris. It's a non-Jewish baby. It's not a Milah Shal Mitzvah. The Milah Shal Geris does need Shmini. So there's a minority opinion among the Bali HaTesvis, and in Achronim also, there's such a minority opinion that a non-Jewish baby cannot be converted. You cannot perform the Bris Milah on a non-Jewish baby before the eighth day. It says in Chumash that a Miknas Kesef is Nima LaEchod, the same day that he's born. They say that's a special din, Miknas Kesef. Not that Miknas Kesef represents the whole category of Milah Shel Geris. That's a Yotze Min HaKlal. But a normal Milah Shel Geris, you have to wait till the Yom HaShmini. The Pashtus says that it's not so. The Rabbeinu Tam holds like that, and the Bali HaTesis held that it was so ridiculous that he said Rabbeinu Tam said something that's not worthy of being repeated. So you have to search to find in the other Rishonim who quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, because most of them just say the Rabbeinu Tam said something that's not correct, and we don't agree. So finally, keep on looking, you'll find in Avodah Zarah. Some of the Rishonim say they quote over the Rabbeinu Tam. The Gemara says that a Tinik Ben Yom who touches wine doesn't asa the wine. Tinik Ben Yom doesn't asa wine with Magoy. So Rabbeinu Tam says that's only a Tinik Ben Yomo, because even if you would want to convert him, it would be impossible, because he can't be Mala baby before the eighth day. But after he's 8 days old and we didn't convert him, then he's worse, because he could have converted and he didn't, then we have it in against him. So if he touches wine, he does asa the wine. All the other Rishonim say that that's utterly ridiculous. They say that there is no such din, that you can't be Mala baby before the Yom HaShmini. I remember we once sitting in a bris and I mentioned it to Rabbi Gifter, so he said, there is no such shita. So I said, I'll show you, we're going to go home. There is no such shita. Finally, we went home and I showed. Okay. Couldn't believe it. No, but in Achronim you have for sure. In Achronim you have this. And Marshon, Achsam Sefer, and the Rapir Shmelech Dinever, and the Derech Pikudecha writes like that. You have Achronim, a few Achronim write like that. There's also, truth of the matter is, like Rabbi Gifter said, there is no such shita. That's not the accepted opinion. There are two different reasons. There's a Milu Shel Mitzvah and a Milah Shel Geris. There is a discussion in the Minchas Chinuch. The din is that the Milah is supposed to be performed by a Jew. If a Goy does a Milah, so the din is that it's possible. That's a Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah. Nochri can't do the Bris Milah. So what's the din if the convert, the candidate for conversion, wants to be Mal himself? Avraham Avinu had no choice. There was no other Jewish person, so he had to be Mal himself. But the question is, L'doiris, can a person be Mal himself, Milo L'Shem Geris? Do you say, Boyin Ke'echot, that by performing this milah he becomes Jewish, and therefore that enables him to perform the milah. He's saying, no, you have to have a Jewish moel who's going to do the bris, and you don't allow the person to do the bris on himself. So they quote that Rav Shlomo Molcho was, when he did the bris milah on himself, he was one of the Meranos. So he did it, and they weren't performing milah for a long time. So he did his own milah. But that's not a raya, because the Meranos were Jewish. Just that they didn't perform milah. They were practicing Christianity. They were afraid of their lives. They were afraid for their lives. So later on, when he decided to forget about the Avodah Zarah and to become fully Jewish, it wasn't really a milah shel geirus. He was Jewish from day number one. So the din is that a Jewish person can perform the bris even if he himself never had a bris. Let's say there's a Jew who never had a bris for some reason or another. So the Gemara says he can't perform the bris milah. And if you have a non-Jew who did have a circumcision, he cannot perform a bris milah.
And a woman, mohelet?
Woman is a machlokes in the Gemara, whether a woman mohelet is acceptable or not. And in the Shulchan Aruch it's a machlokes, had a paskin, a machlokes in the Rishonim. So the Shach writes, halacha lemaisa, we avoid it, because of the machlokes of Rishonim had a paskin. But if it would be Shmini, if it would be the eighth day, and the alternative is, either you have the woman do the bris milah today, or if you're going to insist on having a Jewish man, then you'll have to postpone the bris till some later date. So if you're stuck like that, then bottom line, we paskin that a woman is kosher to do the bris milah. Around 10 years ago, they had a piece in the newspapers that the New York Board of Rabbis approved 25 women, mohalos, to perform bris milah. Must have been a lot of shas atchaks. They must live up in Medina Zayam. I don't know where this New York is. There are no male mohalim. Not enough male mohalim to go around. Okay.
What is that? Was that relationship Noach and Shem Mayer?
What was the big deal that he found Hashem? He had Noah still alive for years, and Shem Mayer. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Doesn't seem that the yeshiva Shem Mayer was too popular. It's a very good question. So the pasuk says that when Avraham Avinu performed the milah, that's the question, was that was a milah shel geirus. That was a milah shel geirus. So the pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed his name from Avram to Avraham. So in Shulchan Aruch, in the commentaries on the side of Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Matei Moshe. Matei Moshe is a sefer, a little sefer. The author's name is Moshe Mat. Mem Tes, or Mem Tov, I'm not sure. I think it was the Talmud of the Ramah, or something like that, Talmud of the Marshal, Talmud of the Ramah, in that generation. So he says that the minhag is that you give the baby a name by the bris, because Avraham Avinu got his new name by the bris. It's not exactly the same. Avraham Avinu got a name by the bris because he was not Jewish before. So the name that he had before was a non-Jewish name. His name was Christopher. His name was Adolf. His name was whatever, James. Or Jesus, whatever. My super's name is Jesus. So when he has a bris milah, so he changed the name, he gave him a Jewish name. He called him Avraham. That's each. When you have a Gersh in this guy, you change his name. But when we have a Jewish baby, the baby is just a Jewish before as he is after. The bris milah doesn't make him into a Jewish baby. He was Jewish before also. But that's the minhag. We follow that minhag, that we give the baby the name by the bris milah.
Is there any concept that the bris like solidifies the kedusha?
It's an ois. It's a symbol of the fact that there is a special bris between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. The Rambam has an interesting chiddush. The Rambam assumes that a Jewish person who didn't have a bris milah for whatever reason, because of medical considerations or because he doesn't want a bris milah, whatever the story is. So the Rambam assumes that there's something incomplete with his kedushas Yisrael. That even the milah of a Jewish baby, even though it's not a milah shel geirus, does make him Jewish. He's Jewish before, but it's mashlim the kedushas Yisrael of the person. The Rambam writes, the Rambam quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Dov zen b'toris Moshe Rabbeinu lo lamadu. There's a din that does not appear in Chumash. Ad shebo Yecheskel ben Buzi v'limdonu. There's a posuk in Yecheskel and he teaches us, Kol ben Nechor erelei v'al brasar lo yovel migdoshi. A Koyin, who's in a Ben Nechar, a Kohen who's Dina Kinochri, The Hainu, either Erel Leiv, either is an apikoris, he's not a mammon, or Erel Basar, he's an Orel. He's not, he has an incomplete Kedushas Kuna. Because since he's Dina Kakum, one who's an apikoris is Dina Kakum. So you can't be a Kohen unless you're a Jew first. If this person is Jewish, but he's Dina Kakum, so his Dina Yisrael is incomplete. So you can't consider him as a full Kohen. So we wouldn't permit such a kind to be makar karbonos on the Beis Hamikdash. Lo yavel mikdashi l'shar sein. And the same is true regarding kol ben necher, any kohen who's a non-Jew, either erel leiv or erel bas. Erel bas means that he's an erel, that he never had a bris milah. So you see from the pasuk that a Jew who didn't have a bris milah for medical reasons, kedin or shaloi kedin, he does not have bris milah, whatever the reason is, it's considered as if he has an incomplete kedushas Yisrael. And therefore, his Kedushas Kuna is going to be incomplete. So the Rambam quotes this din, and he says, normally, when you have a din, you only give malchus to a person who violates an aver that's dumi the lav da chasim, similar to the lav of lasachsam shabadisha. Because in Chumash Dvarim, Yidarshan smuchim, and these two psukim are next to each other. It says, lasachsam shabadisha, right after the pasuk, vohayon bin hakos harosha. If a person is a rasha, he deserves malchus. So which Russia deserves Malkus? And the next pasuk says, Lasachsam Shabbidishai. That's a dogma. Whoever violates an Aver, which is similar to the Lav of Lasachsam Shabbidishai. Dumi de Lav de Hasim. So number one, Dumi de Lav de Hasim means that it's written in Chumash. If you have a Halach of Moshe Messina, that something is also, that's not even written in the Chumash. That's for sure not considered Dumi de Lav de Hasim. Even if the Yisr is written in Chumash, it doesn't say Loi, like Loi Sachsam Shabbidishai. The Gemara says, if it says Hishama Pen Aral, that's the equivalent of Loi. But if it doesn't say one of these four Lashonis, Hishama Pen Alo, just Alav Abba Mechlal Asay, so the Gemara says, you're not Loi, because it's not similar to Lasachs Meshav Adish. So the Rambam writes that, let's say someone eats Orlo in Eretz Yisrael. The favorites that grow the first 3 years are Orlo. So somebody eats Orlo in Eretz, so he gets Malkus, because he violated the Pasuk that says, he violated a law that says law. If he eats orla b'chutz lords, the Rambam said that's halacha Moshe Mesinai. So that's not even a pasuk at all. So there's no malchus on that. The Rambam disagrees with the Gaonim and say that there is malchus. He says it can't be. There's no malchus. Not written in Chumash at all. Here, this law, the Gemara says it's not written in Chumash. Dov zem b'teres Moshe Abayin olola madu. There is no Chumash. Hashaboy cheskel ben buzi yidilim donu. The pasuk in Yecheskel says that kol b'necher erelev erel basal oyav mikdash and orel is not allowed to be makriv karbonis, and the Rambam says that you get malchus. How come you get malchus? But it contradicts the other Rambam. The Rambam says that if you eat orel b'chutzlo, there's no malchus because it's only halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So this also is not written in the Chumash. So the answer is, Rav Chaim explains in his sefer, why did the Gaonim disagree with the Rambam by the Orla B'chutzlar? The Rambam quotes the Gaonim, who think that if one eats Paris Orla B'chutzlar the first 3 years, you get Malkus, and he disagrees. So how do they understand? How can it be? But it has to be Dumi Delav De Hasima, if it's not written in Chumash at all. Rav Chaim explains in his Sefer that there are two types of Halacha L'Moshe M'sina. There's a Halacha HaMechadeshes and a Halacha HaMefareshes. That's not his terminology, that's my terminology. I think Rav Soloveitchik probably used that expression. So sometimes you have a halacha l'moshe m'sina that comes up with a brand new din. Nisach ha-mayim on sukkahs. No pasuk, let's say there's no pasuk, halacha l'moshe m'sina. Arav al ha-mizbeach, a brand new din. And sometimes you have a halacha ha-mefareshes. The pasuk in Chumash, let's say, has a din you have to be toivel in a mikveh, and you don't know how much water you need for the mikveh. So halacha l'moshe m'sina says you need aboim sos. Aboim sos is not a new din. Aboim sos is just a shir. It's explaining what's the definition of a mikveh. So let's say the Rambam's opinion is the Safik Deraisa Lechumra and Safik Halacha L'moshe M'sina is Lekula. But the Rambam quotes the Mishnah that if you have a Safik, if you have Arboim So in the Mikveh, there you go Lechumra. Why? So he said, because this is not a Halacha that's coming up with a new din. This is a Halacha that's just telling you the Shir. The Halacha is explaining Pshat and the Chumash. That says you have to be Toivel in the Mikveh. So it's telling you how much water do you need in the Mikveh. So the Rambam and the Gaonim have an argument, what's the nature of the Halacha L'moshe M'sina? That Orla B'chutz L'aretz is forbidden. So the Rambam understands it's Halacha HaMechadeshes, it's a brand new Halacha L'moshe M'sina. The Chumash says in Parshas Kedoshim, Ki Sevoi Al Ha'aretz, when the Titan Kolaitz Michael Baraltim Alosso, Sholoshan Amarevi Yoachem Lo Yoch. Chumash, it says it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. So the Halacha L'moshe M'sina is a Yesh Me'ayin, it's a new din, only known for the Torah Shebal Peh, and there's no Malkus on that. The Gaonim understood differently. The Gaonim understood, that's what Rav Chaim explains, and he says, if you look in the Shiltas, it's black and white. The Gaonim understood that the pshuta, the pasha pshat and the pasuk kisavoy al haaretz implies that the laws of orla only apply in Eretz Yisrael. So the halacha l'moshe Messina says wrong. Kisavoy al haaretz is not the makom nihu ka mitzvah, it's the zman nihu ka mitzvah. The mitzvah only begin. All the mitzvahs began after Matan Torah. This mitzvah only begins after kisavoy al haaretz. When you will enter Eretz Yisrael, then the din of orla applies all over the world. It applies even in chutz l'aretz. So the halacha l'moshe Messina is not mechadish a brand new din. That doesn't say in Chumash. No, the Allah is reinterpreting the pasuk to say that Orla B'chutzos is included in the Chumash. So that's what led the Gaonim to say that one who eats Orla B'chutzos does get Malkus. Because after the Allah Moshe Messina has reinterpreted the pasuk, the Savoyal Horts is not the Mokum Nihu HaMitzvah, but rather the Zman Chilos Nihu HaMitzvah. Kisavoy al haaretz, after the Jews will enter Eretz on days of Yishuv Benun, then they're entitled to call Eretz Machal anywhere. Wherever they plant, there'll be a din of Orla, even a chutz l'aretz. So it comes out that Orla b'chutz l'aretz is based on the Pasuk in Chumash. So the same over here, the Rambam apparently understood this Pasuk in Yecheskel that forbids a kohen who's an Orl from being makro karbonis in the Beis HaMikdash. There's not a separate din. The Rambam says, Orl she'ovad loike, because dina kizar. He understands that the Pasuk in Yecheskel is just being megala that a Jewish kohen who never had a bris milah for medical reasons or for anti-religious reasons, for whatever reasons, they never did a bris milah on this kohen. A kohen who never had a bris milah falls under the category of a zar. Why? You can't be a kohen unless you're first Jewish. In order to be a full status of a Jew, you have to have a bris milah. Not only is the milah shel geiros what endows a nochri with kedushas his soul, even a baby who's born Jewish, when you do the bris milah, so the Rambam assumes that the milah is mosif to the kedushas Yisrael, completes the kedushas Yisrael. So that's why the Rambam, that's the pasuk in Yecheskel, that if you have a kohen who never had a bris milah, he has an incomplete din kedushas Yisrael. So you can't have a complete din kohen. You can't be a kohen if you're not Jewish. Like the Chazon Ish writes, the Behetev has a suffik. Behetev quotes from the Chacham Tzvi, a suffik, if somebody made a goylum, can you be mitzarif the goylum to a minyan? So the Chazon Ish says, what are you talking about? The Goylem is not a human being. In order to be Mitzarif from Tamin, it has to be Jewish. In order to be Jewish, you have to be a human being. The Gemara says, Rabba Bara Gavra. Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Rabba made a Goylem, and then he saw the Goylem wasn't able to carry on a conversation, so he killed him. They killed the Goylem. So obviously the Goylem is not a Jew, he's not a Goy, he's not a human being. He doesn't count as a human being. So he said, he's not a human being, so how can you discuss a Sophic if he's Jewish? In order to be Jewish, you first have to be a human being. So the Rambam says, in order to be a kohen, you first have to be Jewish. So if you have an incomplete status of kedushas yisrael because you didn't never had a bris milah, so you're not going to have a full status of a kohen. A kohen is only to the extent that he's Jewish, he'll become a kohen on top of that. If he has an incomplete din yisrael, so he can't be considered a kohen. That's a chiddush that the Rambam writes that a kohen orel she'ovad, even though davar zeh mitoras Moshe Rabbeinu lo lamadnu, there's no pasuk in Chumash at all. There's no pasuk in Chumash. It's not dumi delav da chasima. It's not similar to l'safsim shabadisha. So how can the Rambam say that there's malchus if he does avodah? So he says no. He's loike because dino kizar. How is he dino kizar? It says hazara karev yumas. Also for a zar to do avodah and beis hamikdash. How is he dino kizar? Because the orel who didn't have a bris milah has an incomplete din yisrael. Whoever doesn't have a full din Yisrael can't have a full din kohen.
So then shouldn't he just be his avodaso pesula? Like similarly, he can't, and kohen aro can't eat truma. So why makos? He's balu, he is pesula yichus, so he doesn't do the avodah. I mean, his avodah is pesula.
Yeah. Here the Rambam says, because dina kizar, a zar shavad is like it. That's a pasuk, that is a loy says. Zar lo yikrav. Okay, that's a different machlokes. What punishment does Bezin give a punishment? Does Bezin Shomar give a punishment? But what about Malkus? Azar Shishimish said that's a pasuk in Chumash. Azar who does hakrovus hakarbonis is loike. So koin orel shavad is dino kizar. That's the Rama. Yeah, we don't offer that chenik.
From Rabbi Hiller, that's it.
Yeah, we don't pass like that, Rabbi Akiva. Yeah.
So then the Chachamim would say that Bidei Shemaim, Bidei Shemakos, Kivan Shabaka, right? So shouldn't he, why would he still have the punish of Nisa Bidei Shemaim?
Maybe he won't, I don't know. We assume
Makos
that
takes it off.
Malchus takes off Koris, probably takes off Nisa B'der Shemaim also. Okay, probably will. Probably correct.
Is he
going like a Balmon? He doesn't say Balmon. He could have said he's a Balmon. He doesn't say that Oral is a Balmon. Adarab, he's not a Balmon. That's where he was born. Everybody's born with Oral. That's not a Balmon. He says, Hareza Kizar. It's a striking Ram. Hareza Kizar. Because it's based on that pasuk in Yechezkel. Bechol ben Echor. Any Kohen who's a non-Jew, how can I have a Kohen who's a non-Jew? Erel Leiv, either an Apikoris, not a Mamin, because an Apikoris dinikakom, or Erel Basar, one who was an Oral, never had a Bris Milo. Lo Yovel Mikdoshi, the Shor Seini. He's not allowed. That Kohen is not permitted to be Makar of Kohanis. There's a Gemara in the end of Chulin, where the Gemara talks about the Matnas Kohunim. There are Chav Talad Matnas Kohunim, 24 Matnas Kohunim. So the Gemara talks there about Zerah L'Chayayim V'Kevan, the last parak in Chulin, when you shecht an animal, you have to give the Zerah L'Chayayim V'Kevan to the Kohen as a matana to eat. So the Gemara says, based on a Pasuk, that Kol Kohen She'en Amoida B'Avoida, if the Kohen doesn't believe in all the dinim of the Avoidas HaKarbonis, you don't give him Matnas Kohunim. So Rashi learns, what do you mean a Kohen She'en Amoida B'Avoida? So Rashi interprets, he doesn't believe in Termin HaShemayim, and he doesn't believe in all the dinim of Kohunim. He doesn't believe in all the detail. So the Ritva says, that's what it means. Kohen is an Apikoris. So what do you need a Pasuk for? An Apikoris is Din Ka'akum. So if he doesn't have a full Din Yisrael, so how can I have a Din of Kohen? The Ritva has this argument against Rashi. He says, you don't need another Pasuk for that. Kol Kohen She'en Amoida B'Avoida. He says, nah, it doesn't mean like that. Kohen She'en Amoida B'Avoida, you don't give Matnas Kohunim means he knows the dinim, he believes in Termin HaShemayim, but he's lazy, so he doesn't always observe the laws of Kohunim. He wants to take the easy route in life. So if he's lazy and he doesn't want to live up to his obligations as a Kohen, so we don't give Matnas Kohunim. But he says, what Rashi said is incorrect. That's a Dava Pashut if he doesn't believe in Termin HaShemayim. So he's not a full Dina Ka'akum. If he's not a full Din Yisrael, he can't be a full Din Kohen. So he can, of course he can't give Matnas Kohunim. He's not a Kohen. He's only a Chatz Yishir of a Kohen. So again, so the meaning is that we give the baby a name by the Bris Milah, but to derive it based on the Pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha, that's when Avraham Avinu was given his name. That's not the same. The Milah of Avraham Avinu was a Milah of Gerus. So that's the meaning. When you have a non-Jew and he converts, you give him a Jewish name. You don't leave him with a non-Jewish name. But by a Jewish baby who is getting a Bris Milah, he was Jewish before also.
Is there a definition of a Jewish name? Is it something common or not, or you can make up whatever?
They make up Jewish names, yeah. Alexander became a Jewish name because the Jews were so happy with Alexander the Great, so they gave everybody names Alexander. Alexander is not a Jewish name. We adopted it as a Jewish name.
What about with Avram, we shouldn't call, once Avram's name was changed, we shouldn't call him Avram.
Mm-hmm.
Agar changes his name, and his name's Christopher, originally. Should we not call him that? Is there any deem that we shouldn't, or it doesn't make a difference?
Probably should not call him by his original name.
What if a person's an adult, they found Judaism, they became enlightened, and they converted, but they're professionals, and this is what they had on all their titles and names, and people call them that?
I would think that the right thing would be to change their name. There's a fellow, there's a rabbi here who's been bugging Rabbi Lamb for many years. He probably was a classmate of Dr. Lamb, that he should change his name from Norman to Nochum, and he'll pay for the new stationery. The rabbi will pay for the new cards and the new stationery for the change of name. So he didn't change it yet. He didn't change his name yet. The Chumash describes that Avram Shepherds and Lot Shepherds couldn't get along together. So they decided that the best thing is to separate. So Lot looked all around and he decided, he saw the area where Sdomba Amora was. And he decided he'll make a fortune of money if he lives over there in that area. Despite the fact that he knew that they were Anshi Sdom, Roy Mechatoim Lashem Yo, they were very evil. But nonetheless, because Bayar is called Kikar Yarden Kicholom Ashke, Lefnei Shachais Hashem Esdem Es Hamoira, Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. He'll become very rich if he moves in there. So he decided to go for the wealth. And then everything was destroyed. The whole Sdom Amora was destroyed. So the Torah is telling us this story. that we should know that when you get married and you have to decide where you're going to live. So you live in a religious neighborhood. You don't live in an anti-religious neighborhood where all the people are roim v'chatoim l'Hashem miyod. It's very hard for a person to lead a life all on his own, not to be influenced by the outside world. Everybody's influenced by the outside world. So we shouldn't lead a life like Lot. We should try to do like Avraham Avinu. Torah tells what happened to Sodom. There was the war between the four kings and the five kings. And then Avraham Avinu felt bad for his nephew Lot, even though Vayisa Lot Bekedem, and Rashi calls Medesh, he gave up his whole belief in Kadmonu Shalom, gave up his whole belief in the Bari Olam. But nonetheless, it was his Mipsoch HaTasalim, of his nephew, so he felt he has an obligation to go save him. So he put together his army of the 318 men. That's how the Chumash says, and that's how the Torah describes it. Rashi quotes from the Gemara that the 318 men is really the gematria of the name Eliezer. There was only one person in his army. But even if you learn not like the Agadatus, he had an army of 318 men. And he went to wage war against the armies of the four kings that just beat out the five kings. So Rashi points out from the Medrash on the Pasuk, Gabo Molochem Esacham Yishoh, the Chumash is mentioning it was 4 to 5, and the four kings beat out the five kings. They must have been exceedingly powerful armies. And Avraham Avinu, with 318 chayalim, is prepared to wage war against them. But we have to get involved. Wasn't it suicidal? So the Chumash says, not only is it not suicidal, he won the war. He won the war. You have to have a lot of bitochen. Depending on the madrega bitochen that you have, that'll determine whether it's suicidal or not. Apparently Avraham Avinu was on such a level of bitochen that he had a right to assume that he's going to win the war. And he did, and he won the war. That's the story that they say. I think that in Volozhin, they were once on Purim, they used to put on a skit to make fun of the Rosh Hashiva and everything. So then the lady is in Volozhin, they had a lot of maskilim, because they wouldn't let them go to any universities. So they had to go somewhere for intellectual excitement. So they went to Volozhin, and they read their novels on the side. They read the other maskilishe books on the side. So they said that once on Purim, they put on a skit that there was a war, and they're describing, making fun based on the Gemara, the Jewish army. So they have an army committee, a board to determine who is accepted in the army, who is not. So the Gemara says, whoever talks in between Psukah de Zimra and Baruch Hu, you don't accept them in the army. Whoever talks in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, you don't take him into the army. Anyone who does any Aver, the Raisa, the Rabbanim. So they interview each candidate. Did you ever do this? Yeah, exactly. You can't take anybody. So they only have three people in the army. They have the Vilna Goyen, and they have the Shagas Aryeh, and they have the Netziv. Something like that. So they put on a whole skit, and everybody was rolling and laughter on the floor, and they couldn't stop laughing. So the Netziv was sitting and listening, and then he said, "So continue. So what's the end of the skit?" So he said, "No, that's the end." He says, "No, the end is that we won the war. The army with the three men won the war." So like the Torah describes, that he had an army with 318 men. The Chazan make it a bigger moifis, that there was only Eliezer, there's only one person in the army, and he went to fight against the biggest army of the time, Abo Malachim Asacham Yishoh, the armies of the four kings who beat out the armies of the five kings. Look how powerful they were. And Avraham Avinu didn't think that it was suicidal. He knew that he's going to win the war, and he did win the war. If he wouldn't be sure that he's going to win the war, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, they have no choice. If they don't fight, so the Arabs are going to kill every man, woman, and child. So of course they have to fight. But over here, Avraham Avinu, what does he have to fight for? Leave Lot alone and don't put your life into sakana. So he wasn't even considered a suffix sakana. He didn't consider it a sakana. He knew in advance that he was going to win the war. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu was punished because Asan Garya b'Talmid HaChachamim. It says, Vayorek es chanichov. He drafted into his army the people who learned Torah by him. And especially according to the way the Chazal say, they had a tradition that it was Eliezer. Eliezer was Damesik Eliezer, Dola Mashkim Mitoras Rabbi. Eliezer was a Talmid Chacham. So the Gemara says in the Dorim that this was not right on the part of Avraham Avinu that he should drift into the army Talmid Chachamim. So he was punished because of that. But he won the war anyway, even though he drafted Talmid Chachamim. In Eretz Yisrael, they draft the rabbis in the yeshivas, they do draft the students, they don't draft in the yeshivas. The rabbis are not Talmid Chacham, only the students are Talmid Chacham. It's a little humorous, not because whoever pays taxes, so they draft. So the rabbis are salaried by the yeshivas, so they send out a tax form. So they are drafted into the army, and the students in the yeshiva are not drafted into the army. But al pi halacha, the din is that a talmid chacham is not supposed to be drafted into the army. Then after the whole milchama is over,
quick, Rabbi, was it by a chalikah like Hamalava, they divide up the night? What does Rashi mean when he says like half he saved the other half for
Tzius Mitzrayim? I don't know. It's a medrash. I'm not sure what it means. So the pasuk says that after the war was over, Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem, Otzi Lechem VeYoyim Hu Chohen LeKel Elyon, VeYerachei VeYoyim gave a blessing to Avram Pin, Baruch Avram LeKel Elyon, Baruch Kel Elyon, Shem Bigim Sarecha BiYodecha. So the Gemara comments on this expression, Hu Chohen LeKel Elyon, Hu Chohen Lein B'Don Kohen, Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem. According to tradition, that's Shem Benoyach. So Malki Tzedek really was a Kohen. He deserved that the Kuna should be transmitted to his children and to his grandchildren, to his future descendant. But because he made a mistake now, so that's why he lost the schus of transmitting the kuhuna. That's why he says, "V'hu kohen l'kel yon, hu kohen, v'ein b'no kohen." What did he make a mistake on? He was intending to give a blessing to Avram Avinu, to give a blessing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he said it in the wrong order. First he says, "Baruch Avram l'kel yon, blessing to Avram Avinu. And a blessing to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, who helped you win the war. Baruch kel yon, shemigin sarecha v'yadecha." He should have said the reverse. He should have said, Baruch Kel Elyon, or Baruch Avram LeKel Elyon. So the Gemara says that was his punishment, that he lost kuhuna for his children. Hu Kohen, Vein Benon Kohen. So that's what Acharonim write, that when someone is taking a drink and wishing L'chaim, when you say L'chaim, so that's a bracha to Abbas of Adam. Then you say Baruch Piagofen or Shehakol, whatever you're saying over whatever you're drinking, so that's a bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you plan to give two brachas, you should really arrange it in the opposite direction. First, you should say the bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then say the L'chaim. I remember once over here in the neighborhood, there was a group of Balabatim that were learning Masech HaShabbos, took forever. They learned once a week. So it's Gulaf Arichas Yomim. So they're learning for 30 years or something, they made a siyum on the Masechta. So they invited me to come to the siyum. So they had champagne. So the first person says L'chaim, 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 Baruch Piagof, and he drinks the champagne. So there was a rabbi there, Rabbi Glucksman, Zechan L'Racham was there. So he tells him, no, that the Achreinim say first, you should say the Baruch Piagof, and then he say L'chaim. So the next one says, okay, I'll do it right. So he says Baruch Piagof, and then he says L'chaim, 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 then he drinks it. So he had charot the day he told him that, then he had explained, no, first you say Baruch Piagof, he take a sip, and after you take a sip, then you say L'chaim to everybody. So that says the later Achreinim point this out. It's interesting, we sometimes have, when you write a ksuba, you write a get, chalila. So let's say if the person is a kohen, so you say, Ploni ben Ploni ha-kohen. Ploni ben Ploni ha-kohen means the father's a kohen. It could be that the son is a cholo. So some achranim say, you got to say, Ploni ha-kohen, ben Ploni. If the son is a kohen, obviously the father's a kohen. So you should say, Ploni ha-kohen. But the meaning is, we don't do like that. We write, Ploni ben Ploni ha-kohen. So what if the son Taki is a cholo? So you just leave it like that. Ploni ben Ploni ha-kohen. You're not going to distinguish between the two cases where the father's a kohen and the son is also a kohen, the father's a kohen and the son is a cholo. So one of the Gdolim had an Einfad, a quote from Rav Leizer Telza, that he writes in his Chuvis, that you should write Ploni ben Ploni behu kohen. Like over here, the Chazal said, behu hu kohen, vein beno kohen. So instead of writing Ploni ben Ploni ha-kohen, she read Ploni ben Ploni v'hu kohen, which is a dead giveaway that the son, whose name was mentioned first, is not a kohen. No, no.
See, I would assume that Et Kel Elyon is referring to Hashem.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Why is there an alternate way to
read? It's not a god that was called Elyon.
I don't think so. I think we assume that that when the Sefer writes this word, Kel Elyon, he should have a mind to be Mekadosh. It's not a shame of it, it's a shame Kodesh. Yeah. That's what the Gemara says, that he was, that Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom was punished for giving the bracha to the boss of Adam before he gave the bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Rabbi, we have a similar din in last mention of Yadayim with the Perushim versus the Saduki Dalili, who says, Sha'atam kosvin ha-samoshal in ha-shem badaf lo, ela sha'atam kosvin ha-samoshal mil malo. That they put the name of Moshe first, and then Hashem. So that, and they use this as the raya in their debate, Purushim against the Tzaduki Galili, that you're doing something incorrect.
Mm-hmm. They should really mention the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu first. Okay. That's what the Taina was over here. Mm-hmm. Our tradition has it that Avraham Avinu's refusal to accept anything from Melech Sodom, he offers him ten al nevesh or chush kaloch. He says he doesn't want to take anything. Hari Mosi Yod El Hashem, Michut Vatzrech Nal. So the Gemara has a tradition that as a reward for refusing to take Michut Vatzrech Nal, it really was entitled, according to Halacha, that's what the Rishonim explained in the Mefarshim Achumish, that he really was entitled to keep everything because he was kind of, when the four kings beat out the five kings, so they were kind of with Kibish Mocham, everything that belonged to the five kings. Then Avraham Avinu with his teeny weeny army beat out the four kings. He was kind of all the property of all the nine kingdoms. Everything belonged to him. So when Melech Sodom said, Ten le'anev shorchush kachloch, he wasn't offering Avraham Avinu to give him the rechush. He was pleading with him, give me ten le'anevish, do me a favor, make me back a king. Because he knows that everything belongs to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was kind of everything with Kibish Mochama. So it's not that he was offering to give a gift and Avraham Avinu turns down his gift. He's asking for a handout. Melech Sodom asks, I used to be a Melech on Sodom, give me back my kingdom. So he said, I don't want to give you back your kingdom. I give you back everything. I don't want anything. Only Rakash Bilodai Rakashoach Lahandarim, Chelik HaNashim, Sherita, Honor Eshkal Malach, Honor Eshkal Amar, Mehem Yikru Chelkom. For the others, he wants to let them keep, but he says he wants to be mevater and everything. So the Gemara says that he was Avraham Avinu was rewarded because of his refusal to keep anything that was rightfully his. He was entitled to it, but he got it through Kibish Muhammad, so he didn't want to keep such. He only wanted to keep what he earned by earning an honest living, not by waging wars, not by winning wars. You win a war, there's also legally it belongs to you, but it looks like Gezel. So that's why he was rewarded. So the Jewish people were given the mitzvah of tzitzis because he refused to accept chut, and we were given the mitzvah of straps of tefillin because he refused to take the sroch nal. The sroch nal doesn't mean shoestrings. They didn't have shoelaces. They used to have shoe straps. Like if you look on a chalitza shoe, so it has ritzuas that are mamish the same as ritzuas of tefillin. So that's why the Chazal understood here, because of Avraham Avinu's refusal to accept the Srech Nal, the shoe straps that looked like Ritzuos HaTfilin, so that's why in the later generations the Jewish people were rewarded and they were given the mitzvah of Tfilin. So that's why the Gemara has Rabbi Kivega and Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Sefer Panim Yafos. They were contemporaries. Panim Yafos is by the author of the Haflo. That was the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, one of the Rebbe's of the Chassam Sofer. So I had two rebbes, one was a kohen, one was a lady. Rav Nos Nadler was a kohen, and the Haflo was a lady. So Sofer writes in one of his tshuvas, what a beautiful sight it would be to see in Frankfurt, the meaning is that before they were duchen, the Levim would wash the cotton hands in front of the shul, in front of everybody. So he says, what a beautiful sight that the rabbi in the shul, the Haflo, would wash the hands of Rav Nos Nadler, the kohen, and he would duchen, and they would chaber each other, and so on. So so this Sefer Panim Yof is a pilpul Sefer HaChumash by the author of the Haflo. So he, Rabbi Kivega quotes him as pointing out, the Gemara has a minhog, it's not a din, a minhog from the days of the Tanoim. When you put on your shoes, when you get dressed, you always put on the right shoe first, everything the right side first. When you tie the shoe straps, and when you tie the shoelaces, then you tie first the left shoe. Why do you first do everything with the right? Because in Hakrovas Karbanas, you have to berserk the dam with the right hand. A kohen who's a lefty can't do avodah. So Mishnah and Pchoros. He has to be a right and he has to do the avodah with the right hand. So we treat our daily living like the Rambam quotes the pasuk b'chol derechecha do'eil. We treat all of our daily activities, when you eat food, when you get dressed, when you go to sleep, when you take a shower, everything we do, we should really be doing b'chol derechecha do'eil. We should do it as an act of avodah Hashem. We want to be clean, we want to be neat, we want to be honest, we want to be healthy in order to do avodah Hashem. Everything we shouldn't compartmentalize, we shouldn't split up our lives that some times of the day, some hours of the day we're doing religious activities, the other parts of the day totally secular activities have nothing to do with the religion. Everything should be swallowed up by the religion. The keeping your body healthy and going to college and doing everything should be an act of Avodas Hashem. So just like in Hakrovas Karbanos, which is Mamas Avodas Hashem, you have to do everything being in. So when you get dressed, you should put on the right shoe first. But as far as tying the shoes, you should tie your left shoe first. So why? Because when it comes to tying, so the tefillin is put on the left arm. So what does the tefillin got to do with tying the shoelaces? So that's what the Rabbi Kibbeger quotes in Shulchan Aruch from the Panim Yafais. He says, because as a reward for Avraham Avinu's refusal to accept the Srech Na'al, the shoe straps, that's why the Jewish people were rewarded generations later with the mitzvah Ritzuus of Tefillin. So there is a connection between the Ritzuus of Tefillin and the shoe straps. So that's why we invoke that memory when we tie the shoe straps, so we tie first the left shoe strap. The Afloah was a Chassidushin. The Afloah was a Talmud of the Rebbe Reber, the Mezritcha Magid. He was the brother of the Rebbe Reb Shmelke. Also, Chassidushin, both Chassidushin. So they both went to, they went from Eastern Europe to Western Europe to serve in the rabbinate in Yekeshe communities. The Afloah went to Frankfurt, and the Rebbe Reb Shmelke went to Nikolsburg. Both German communities at the same time. They both went at the same time. So the Afloah felt very frustrated all the years that he was there in Frankfurt. Now in Frankfurt they have to say over everything from Rabbi Hirsch. You have to say from Rabin Hirsch. You can't be a rabbi if you don't say over from Rabbi Hirsch. That was before Rabbi Hirsch's times. But you couldn't say over Hasidus. They didn't want to have. So he felt very frustrated all the years he was there. Couldn't say ever one word that he heard from his Rebbe, from the Rebbe up there. Felt very big. But when he wrote the Sefer Panim Yavos on Chumash, he quotes a lot from the Magid, from the Mezritcha Magid. But his son was brought up in Frankfurt. So his son was brought up as a real Yekid, as a Misnagid. So the Panim Yavos wasn't printed until after the father died. So the son was in charge of printing. So he removed every single time that the father quotes the Magid. So they point out in the introduction, sometimes the Magid Mishnah was there. Because sometimes he quotes the Magid Mishnah, he calls him Harava Magid, and the son didn't realize that's not the Mezritcha Magid, that's the Holy Rishon, the Magid Mishnah. So he, sometimes the tzaddikim suffered because of the Rishon. So the Magid Mishnah suffered because of the Mezritcha Magid also. Kadosh Baruch Hu notifies Avraham Avinu on the occasion of the Bris Milah, is giving him a matana of Eretz Yisrael. I think Rabbi Yankif Emden quotes this in his Siddur, that the minig is that when you attend the Bris, you give a matana to the Bali HaSimcha. What is the minig based on here? Kadosh Baruch Hu attended the Bris and he gave him a matana, gave him Eretz Yisrael. We usually don't give so valuable a matana. You don't give $5 billion worth of a matana. Give a little gift, but Rabbi Yankif Emden in the Siddur writes that the mocker is from the story in Chumash, that the Rebbe Shalom gave the matana at that occasion. So Avraham Avinu asks him, "Bama'eda ki Rashenu." So it sounds like a chutzpahdikah question. How do I know you're going to keep a promise? Maybe you're going to double-cross me. Maybe you won't live up to your promise. That's the Pashup Shah. So there is such a medrash that Avraham Avinu was punished for asking Bama'eda, chutzpahdikah question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him using the same language, Yodoya Teita Kigeh Yezaracha. You said, Bama Eida, Tuves Shanei Movisen. I'm going to punish you, the Jewish people, your descendants will suffer for 400 years in Egypt and so on. The whole Golos Mitzrayim was a punishment. That's one version in the Medrash. Other Midrashim assume, Bama Eida Kirishan was not a chutzpahdikah question. How do I know you're going to keep your promise? So in the last Daf of Maseches Megillah, on the last Amud Beis, the Sichta ends on an Amud Aleph. So the last Amud Beis, before that last Amud, the Gemara has a different interpretation. Bamoeida ki Roshena was a question, what zechus will my descendants be entitled? Bamoeida sholo, beizeh zechus is kaimu bo. Rashi quotes it from the Gemara. What zechus will my descendants have to have that they should be entitled to hold on to Eretz Yisrael? So Kodesh Baruch Hu tells him, Kholi Eglim Shuleshes, the answer was, B'schus HaKravas HaKarbonis. And then the Gemara continues to fill in the rest of the story that already does not appear in the Chumash. That's Nicha B'zman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYikayim, and the Jews are able to be Makar HaKarbonis. What's going to be in 1948 when you reach a period of time where the Jews don't have the opportunity to bring Karbonis? So what Z'chus do the Jewish people have to control their Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara has a tradition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, this is already not based on Pesukim. Because Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu they should recite the Parshas HaKarbonis and Mala Ani Aleim Kilu Hikrivim. As it says in the Pasuk, Unishalma Farm Svarsenu, the Gemara quotes other Pesukim like that. That Bizman, when we don't have the ability to bring Karbonis, and the only thing we can do is to recite the Pesukim of the Karbonis, so let them recite the Pesukim, and I will consider it as if they had offered the Karbonis. So the Rabbeinu Yoyin in his commentary on the Rif in the first Perek in Brachas understands that this is a real din d'oraisa, that reciting karbonos every day is a real din d'oraisa. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is a din d'oraisa. Whatever the Chachamim institute is a din d'rabban. So if they had a tradition that that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam told Avraham Avinu, so Bizman Shein Beis HaMikdash Kaim, reciting the Pesukim of the karbonos is a din d'oraisa. In Shulchan Aruch, this is not presented like that. The Mechaber quotes Rishonim and say, it's a nice idea. It's a good recommendation to recite the Pesukim of the Karbonis every day. But the Rabbeinu Yoyin holds that it's a real din d'oraisa. Reciting Pesukim de Zimra for sure is only a Midas Chasidus. That's not it's not even a din d'rabban. But the Gemara says, different Tanoim and Amoraim live to a ripe old age, and the Talmidim asked them about Meharachta Yomim. So one of them says, he's always careful to recite Pesukim de Zimra. So you see from the Gemara, the Pesukim de Zimra. Pesukim de Zimra, you have Brachas, Baruch Shama, and Yishtabach, which apparently were composed by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, but nonetheless it's assumed that it was composed as a Midas Chasidus. If a person wants to, if he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to say Pesukim de Zimra. So it's interesting, many shuls, they skip Karbonis Lagamrei, and Pesukim de Zimra they run through. So maybe they should do Fakir, maybe according to Rabbeinu Yonah, they should say the Karbonis, maybe they should skip the bridge, the Pesukim de Zimra.
All the Karbonis, just Karbon Atamin?
Karbon Atamin, yeah, Karbon Atamin. The reciting of the whole that's for a different reason. That has nothing to do with Neshama Farm Sosenu. That's only for the purpose of being Kavei Itma LaTorah Shlish B'Mikra Shlish B'Mishnah Shlish B'Talmud. So the Rishon in Tosfos in the first Perek in Kedushin quotes from the Tshuvas Hagoyim like that. That this was instituted to recite the Zemekom, and that's the Shlish B'Mishnah. Then you have the Braiser Rabbi Shmuel Leimer, that's considered Shlish B'Talmud. And you say the psukim of the Talmud and the Ketorah, so that's Shlish B'Mikra. They understand Shlish B'Mikra, Shlish B'Mishnah, Shlish B'Talmud, not like the Rambam. The Rambam says, if a guy works for a living and he only has 9 hours a day to learn, joking the Rambam. He works for a living, he only has 9 hours a day to learn, so he should learn the 9 hours a day that he has, he should learn 3 hours a day, he should learn Tanakh, 3 hours a day he should learn Halacha Psukah, Mishnah, and 3 hours a day he should learn Talmud. That's if he works for a living and he only has 9 hours a day. So the Rambam understands Shlish B'Mikra, Shlish B'Mishnah, Shlish B'Talmud means that your learning should be balanced. You should have evenly spread out. You should learn 1/3 of your total knowledge of learning should be in the area of Tanakh, 1/3 should be in Halacha, Pesukim, and 1/3 should be in Talmud. And the Gaonim don't agree with that Rambam. They understood Shlish B'Mikra, Shlish B'Mishnah, Shlish B'Talmud. It's not that the learning should be balanced. I don't know why not. Why shouldn't they require that the learning should be balanced? I don't know why, but that's how they learn. They learn it's just a din of kviya sitim latur. That there's a halacha that says you have to be kaveh itim latur every day. You have to set aside time to learn. So one has to set aside a little bit of time every day to learn a little bit Tanakh, to recite a little Tanakh, to recite a little bit Mishnah, and then to recite a little bit Talmud. And then the rest of the day, you're free to learn whatever you please. So if you enjoy Tanakh, so learn away Tanakh. You learn Halacha, so learn Halacha. You learn Gemara, so learn Gemara. So it's not really a din shlish, 1/3, 1/3, 1/3 of his sum total of all of your knowledge should be in Tanakh and in Halacha. And this, like the Rambam said, they said, in the Kviya Sitam Latar, you have to have a little bit of A, a little bit of B, a little bit of C. So that's our practice. Mishnah Berurah just quotes, the Maharil has a suffix regarding Mishnah Dalit. Ho'il HaKadosh Kadoshim, Shchitos about suffix. Maybe that's not only B'Torah Shlish B'Mishneh, maybe that's because of an Neshama Farm Soseinu. Maybe it's not enough an Neshama Farm Soseinu to recite the Pesukim from the Chumash, maybe you have to say the Mishnah as well, the Torah Shabbat Peh. So what's an Nafkamina, whether this or that? So it's Nafkamina is women. The women are not Mukhayiv to do Shlish B'Mishneh, Shlish B'Talmud, but women are Mukhayiv in Karbonis. By us, the men don't say Karbonis. And the Maharil is worrying, the women have to say Ha'il HaKadosh Kadosh. The women are not Mukhayiv to say the rest of the Zemekoyman. But maybe the women are mechuyev to say Hoel HaKadosh Kadosh. Or let's say you have a guy who's going to learn in the Beis Medrash all day long. He's going to have 9 hours or whatever. or whatever he's going to learn. He's going to learn 2 hours of learning. So he doesn't need the shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'tal. But maybe he should still say Hu'ayla Kodesh Kodashim. Maybe Mishnah Dalit he should say the Torah and the Shalma for him. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes a suffix from the Maharil. On this occasion, the Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu had no children, and he said, well, all these promises, everything, so the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes him out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, go out of your tent, he tells him to look up at the stars, and he says, Kol Yizaracha, you're going to have so many children. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes a minhag, some say, some date this minhag all the way back to the days of the Talmud Yerushalmi, maybe earlier. And Shulchan Aruch says when a couple is getting married and the girl is young and she's able to have children, so the minig is that you get married outside to invoke the blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avraham Avinu. If a woman is remarrying at the age of 85 and she plans to practice birth control, she's not going to have any babies after 85. So then he says in Shulchan Aruch she can get married inside the house. She doesn't have to. The idea of getting married outside is to invoke the blessing. The way they do now, they roll up the roof. That wasn't the meaning. The meaning is that you walk outside. You have to walk outside. And the Chazal have a whole sugya in the Gemara. In the end of Shabbos, there's a whole sugya vagarta of Ein Mazal Yisrael. That the history of the Jewish people is Lamaila Min Hateva. Mazel means tachas shlitas hakachov v'hamazal. When the Baruch Shalom created the world, Sheshis made Bereshis, so he created the world with principles of physics and chemistry and biology and mathematics and everything, and principles of history that govern history. And if a person understands the rules and regulations of history and he knows what's going on, he can predict what's going to happen in the future based on the rules and regulations of history. Except for Jewish history. That's not shaykh to predict. Ein mazal Yisrael. Jewish history is l'mayla men ha-kechov and v'hamazal, l'mayla men ha-teva. So that's a whole sugya in the Gemara. Ein mazal Yisrael. So Gemara comments this drasha on the pasuk v'yotzei osa achutza. The Rabbanu Shalom told him, tzei mitztagninu shalcha, that you're looking into the teva. Based on teva, Avraham Avinu was unable to have any children. His wife was unable to have any children. He was an orka and she was an akora and everything was impossible. Klal Yisrael didn't exist. Based on Teva, we wouldn't have existed. So the Baruch Shalom says, "Tzei mi itztagninu shelcha." That there's no mazal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is lemaila min haTeva. Rabban Achumish writes that this is one of the Ikari Amuna. That one who doesn't believe in this is missing a basic principle of faith. The Rambam lists off what he thinks are the 13 Ikari Amuna, but it doesn't necessarily mean to the exclusion of other principles. There are more than 13 Ikari Amuna. The Rambam also agrees that Bechiras Yisrael is an Ikari Amuna. So the parasha ends with the mitzvah bris milah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Avraham Avinu the mitzvah milas habein and milas eved, the two types of eved, yilid bais and miknas kesef, nimalech and nibal shmaina, the various dinim. The Mishkan Zankiv quotes a passage from the Zohar, who has a drasha. The Zohar has a drasha on a pasuk in Lech Lecha, where the Zohar derives from the pasuk that there are three parts to the mitzvah milah. There's milah and pri and hatofas adam. This is the question: is that really al pidin? Does every bris milah have to have hatofas adam? Let's say you can perform a bris milah. Some of the Moilim came up with a clamp years ago. Many claim that it causes more pain to the baby. That doesn't make any sense to use the clamp. But the question is, they used to use a clamp where they would close off the flow of blood 5 minutes before the bris milah, and then when you perform the bris milah, no blood will be spilt at all. So you yotzi such a bris milah. You did milah and you did priya. Milah means you cut off the outer thick skin. Priya means you removed or you fold down the lower thin membrane. And then the question is, do you really need Atofas Dam? Because in the Gemara, you only have a discussion about Atofas Dam Bris in a situation when a baby is Noilad Mahu, and you can't perform any Bris Mila. There's nothing to cut off. So do you need Atofas Dam Bris? And that's a Machlekes. Or let's say, Anochri Habol his Gayer, Shehu Mahu. A non-Jew had a circumcision performed on him, and now he wants to convert. So normally a ger habocher isgar has to perform bris milah. So here he has nothing to perform a bris milah. So the Gemara has a machlokes hatanim. They need a hatofes dambris. So the Gemara talks about a tofes dambris in a situation where you're unable to perform milah as a substitute for milah. Is that what we hold? That it's only as a substitute, but when you're actually doing a bris milah, then there's no need for a tofes dambris? Or do we really hold like this Zohar? The Zohar insists that there are three parts to every bris, and every bris must have a tofes dambris. You don't have a tofes dambris, I swear that you're not yotze. So we're machmer for that.
Is there a hidus chasidus for the ger not to use some kind of like pain medicine instead of taking the bris?
That's a shaila that some of the rabbanim say. Sridi Eish writes like this: that when the ger is having the mila performed, so this is his achnasa lebris. So it does make sense if he's going to have a full anesthetic, that he's going to be sleeping. He's entering his nerbris in a state of sleeping. So he said maybe if he has a local anesthetic that he doesn't feel the pain, but he's awake, so that he can understand. But he should have a full anesthetic that he should be sleeping while he's entering the bris. So he thought that that's not acceptable. He should be, in his right mind, he should be bedaito at the time that you're doing the bris milah.
There's no habits of going through the pain.
To have the pain. Some Achrenim write like that. So some of the Gedolim write, the Sridi Eish quotes those who said like that. That in the days of the Tanoim, they also knew about local anesthetics. So why don't they always give every baby a local anesthetic? So the Teretz is because part of the mitzvah is to develop the feeling of Mesiras Nefesh in the child, so the child should suffer pain. So B'davki, you should not use an anesthetic. That's the question is whether the baby feels any pain. The baby's only 8 days old. They say the baby only cries because it's cold. He doesn't feel any pain. The nervous system has not yet developed sufficiently that he should feel any pain from the cutting. When you do a milah shel bezman, the baby is a month old or 2 months old, then he feels pain. Then he feels that he's cutting something up. But when the baby's only 8 days old, so they say they don't think the baby feels any pain. He cries because it's cold, because someone's touching him. But not so much from the pain. But that's what some Achrenim say. That in the days of the Gemara, they also knew that there's such a thing as a local anesthetic. So why didn't they use it? So he says, Teretz says, because the baby's supposed to feel pain. So that's some insist like that, and others say that it's not true. The Gemara learns that from Sukkim that a Nochri cannot perform a bris milah. That's another resort on Daf Chavav. Gemara says a Nochri cannot perform bris milah. So the Rambam writes, if a Nochri performed the bris milah b'di'evad, so you leave it like that, you don't require hatofas dam bris. So there's a machlekes what the Rama meant by this. So the Kesef Mishnah writes a suggestion that the Rambam understood in the Gemara that all the drushes that they had, it's only lachatchila. But b'di'evad, if the Nochri does a bris milah, b'di'evad, the milah is good. So that's why we wouldn't insist on having hatofas dam bris. Shagazari says, no, that's not what it means. Hatofas dam bris is impossible. It's meaningless. The Rambam never requires hatofas dam bris, not only by Nochri. If there's nothing to do a milah about, so there's nothing to do a tovus dambris. If the baby was nerlad mahul, then he more talks about a tovus dambris. But whenever the milah was done b'psul, Rama never says any other case. In Shulchan Aruch we have discussions nimol balayla and nimol toch shmoina. So the Rama says it depends. If nimol balayla, you have to repeat a tovus dambris. If nimol toch shmoina, you don't have to repeat a tovus dambris. Nushach disagrees with the Rama's compromise. He thinks that you always need a tovus dambris. So the Shagzari says that he thinks the Rambam holds that you never need Hatovas Dambris. Whenever there was an Orla and they cut it off Shaloi Kedin, a Nochri Mayol, or Balayla, or Terchmaina, so the Shagzari understood in the Rambam that he holds that there's no room for Hatovas Dambris there. The only time there's Hatovas Dambris is by Noilad Mohu, as a substitute for Milo, or by a Gerish and his Garki Shehu Mohu. There the Rambam talks about Hatovas Dambris. That's by Gerus. But by Mila Shal Mitzvah, not by Mila Shal Geris, the Shagasai understood according to the Ram, that Bechlal does not have his numbers. Our practice is L'maisa like the Shach, that whenever a baby was born with an Orla, and the Mila was done improperly, either by Goy Shemoyel, or by Balailo, or Toch Shmoina, so we do require Hatovas Dambris. Not like the Ramah who made a Pshara, that Toch Shmoina wouldn't require Hatovas Dambris, and Balailo he would require. You follow the Shach, that you always need Hatovas Dambris. Okay, today we celebrated the bris of my grandson. Rabbi Tani Cohen had his fourth baby boy. And next Thursday, my other son, Yami, whom some of you know, called us up in the middle of the night that his wife just had a baby boy. So next Thursday, I probably will not be giving a shiur. I'll probably be in Toronto to cover the bris. Okay? So the bechina is on Monday, Shatev Maslach, is 10 o'clock. But Sunday will continue to go weiter. Sunday we'll learn the next Gemara, Dafayin Amanah. And Monday afternoon.